Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us on this Memorial Day is Helen Barfield, a longtime activist with Veterans for Peace, who was deployed with the U.S. military in Korea. She is helping organize a series of events at the Mall in D.C. today, displaying the human cost of war on Memorial Day. Welcome to Background Briefing, Helen Barfield.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
And Ellen, just to go back to last Thursday when President Trump caught everybody by surprise and pulled out of the planned summit in Singapore on June the 12th with Kim Jong-un, North Korean leader, it looks as though, I mean, you could probably make this case that John Bolton, his national security advisor, sabotaged it initially by bringing up the so-called Libya model as a way for North Korea to disarm. And the North Koreans, of course, thinking about what happened to Gaddafi, felt that that was pretty much a threat, if you will. And then later,
I would call it an extreme threat. Yes.
Right. Well, but then, in addition to that, Mike Pence, the vice president, when asked about the Libyan model, says, "Well, yes, if the North Koreans don't make a deal, they could end up like Gaddafi," which then prompted the North Koreans to say that Mike Pence is a political dummy, and then Trump allegedly used as an excuse, that insult as an excuse to cancel the meeting. But just to touch on the broader landscape here, do you think that the neocons and Vice President Pence sabotaged this, or did something else happen?
It's hard to know. I agree with your comment about Trump is government by stunt, and the people he puts in place behave predictably, maybe not for him, but for some of the rest of us. You say it was a total surprise that Trump pulled out. I'm not really very surprised. That's what he does, is throw temper tantrums. And yes, so did the North Korean leaders, and have for quite a while. So here we have two toddlers bashing each other off the head. I'm not terribly surprised. And I kind of would rather Trump stayed out of it and let the two Korean leaders, perhaps out of fear of what Trump might do, perhaps out of finally knocking their heads like that old V8 commercial, "Wow, I could have talked with my cohort on the other side of the country," or the, you know, it was one country for a very long time until the Western leaders got involved. So we could sit down and work this out together, and let's not invite Trump. I don't blame them for feeling that way if they do. I feel that way. So I'm not surprised Trump has done what he's done, and it may be a better thing, actually.
Well, but I'm not very reassured. You talk about two toddlers, Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, and that's, I think, a very apt description. But these are toddlers with nuclear weapons.
Absolutely. It's terrifying. I'm not saying I'm not afraid. I am. But I think it's more likely that the two Korean leaders can work it out than that Trump could help in any way. Yeah. So, you know, this gave him his tweetable moment, and he'll move on to something else, I hope. It's, yes, John Bolton is a terrifying figure and has been for a long time. These terrible government under leaders keep coming back. It's awful and distressing. And Pence is, yeah, not very smart in his foreign policy estimates. So it's more embarrassment for this country. Yes, I'm very embarrassed to be a citizen of this country. The rest of the world is rolling their eyes, but also afraid because, yes, we've got massive numbers of weapons. North Korea has a few. The U.S. has many. So all this blather about how dangerous North Korea is, yeah, if you poke a hyena, they can be dangerous, but the U.S. is massively more dangerous.
Well, but this is the what Donald Trump stressed in his address last Thursday, explaining why he pulled out of the nuclear talks or the disarmament talks with North Korea. He went on to talk about how powerful our military is. And he equated our military power, saying he's fixed it, he's made us more powerful than ever. But he equated U.S. military power with how much money we're spending. He said, you know, we're spending $700 billion on the military, and next year we're going to spend $716 billion. I mean, it's an extraordinary, to equate military power. And in fact, without the real full spectrum of national security, because our national security has other dimensions than military power, economic power, cultural power, and moral power. Not that there's much of that left.
No, not much. Absolutely. And it would be much better for us and for the world if our leaders would stop thinking every nail needs a hammer. That is more and more the only way we interact with the world, and it's awful, and it takes away from human needs in this country. I am, among other things, participating in the Poor People's Campaign, this 40-day campaign, to point out that poverty, racism, militarism, and environmental devastation are all deeply interconnected, and military threats to the rest of the world, spending massive amounts of money to beef up an already enormous military, which has somewhere around 1,000 bases in over 150 countries around the world. I mean, come on. Isn't that enough? Isn't that way too much already? Yes, it is atrocious and embarrassing and frightening behavior, definitely. And my organization, Veterans for Peace, one of my organizations, is going to be doing a lot of things over the Memorial Day weekend in small ways, because we're not a big organization, but we've been doing some really moving events in D.C. around Memorial Day for several years now, and we'll be doing them again today.
So, again, I'm speaking with Ellen Barfield, a longtime activist with Veterans for Peace, who was deployed with the U.S. military in Korea. She is helping organize a series of events at the Mall in Washington, D.C. today, displaying the human costs of war on Memorial Day. So, I wonder, though, how we're going to get out of this predicament, because the former head of U.S. intelligence, General Clapper, just recently said that, in effect, Putin and the Russians put this guy, Trump, in the Oval Office. He made no bones about it. And I think you have to assume that since he was a director of national intelligence in a long-time military and intelligence career on a very, you know, nonpartisan basis, like most military people, I have to believe what he's saying. And so I feel like we are caught between a criminal kleptocrat in the Kremlin and a criminal kleptocrat in the Oval Office. And Trump is working overtime. He's fighting both against truth and against the law. He's trying to gin up this whole campaign on Fox News, calling it Spygate. We've never had a situation where the investigated is able to investigate the investigators. So he's turned the table, and he's blaming all of his woes on the deep state. Well, ironically, since I don't have a lot of faith in the Democrats, and I'm disgusted by the Republicans for enabling this criminal to behave the way he is and ruin this country, all that's left is the deep state to get rid of him. I mean, well, except for the people. So you tell me what you think.
Well, yes. I don't want the deep state in charge any more than I want Trump in charge. They're both very dangerous. So, yes, it's the people. And, you know, that's been my life's work for 30 years and will continue to be as long as I'm still around, is to try to inspire the people to rise up. And referring back to the Poor People's Campaign, that's what it's trying to do, too, to link the various threats we face and point out how connected they are. The massive U.S. military threats and spending are terrible for the world, terrible for U.S. citizens, terrible especially for oppressed and deprived U.S. citizens, poor people, African Americans, and other people of color, LGBT folks, women, you know, it goes on and on. Anyone who's been disadvantaged is more disadvantaged by every worsening we have. And I have never believed that things had to bottom out before, or, you know, wanted that to happen so that people would rise up. But I got to say, it seems perhaps that is what's happening. Fear and trembling about Trump being in the White House seems to have inspired a lot of people. I don't know if it'll be enough. We never know if it'll be enough. But more and more people are recognizing they have to hit the streets. They have to get more active. They have to speak out more. And that's where we need to go. So in our very small way, Veterans for Peace will be trying to point out the horrendous causes of war and show a different way, show that peace, sitting down and talking things out instead of always going to the military option, is the way we have to go. And if it will never happen unless the citizens demand it. Yes, Trump is increasing military spending even more, but it's not as if it was low before. It's always been extremely high, and it's getting even higher.
Well, what I'm afraid of, among a lot that we've been discussing already, Ellen Barfield, I find that the scary notion of a weak strongman, and that's the case of Kim Jong-un. You know, he presides over a decrepit country, but they've got nuclear weapons. And by the way, he was worried about whether his plane could fly all the way to Singapore. And he was worried about security in Singapore and whether there'd be a coup against him while he was away, out of town, etc. I mean, this is the reality of this weak strongman. But we also have a weak strongman in Donald Trump. He's obviously insecure, infantile, and the letter that he sent last week to the North Koreans was like, in fact, Wendy Sherman, one of the negotiators on the Iran deal, said it was like a 13-year-old at overnight camp breaking up with his best friend and calling his mother to let him come home.
Yes. You know, whatever childish accusations we can make about Trump, I think, are very true, and Kim Jong-un also. As I said, it's like two toddlers. I wouldn't even say 13 years old. And that makes it very frightening. But again, I want to say that the massively too big U.S. military is not something Trump invented. He's increasing it, yes, but he's only increasing something that was already there under both Democrats and Republicans. I very appreciated your saying you don't have any faith in the Democrats, nor do I. The Republicans are horrendous, but the Democrats are not much better. They are all in the thrall of the military-industrial complex, and it behooves the arms merchants to keep tensions high, to keep selling equipment, to keep bringing in massive amounts of money from the U.S. taxpayers. That is a grotesque situation, and the only way it's going to change is if the people demand it.
Well, but how do you get to that point? I mean, you talked about how more and more people are going to be politically motivated and take to the streets because of the dangerous nature of the moment and the fact that our president is at war with the rule of law in this country and is undermining democracy. I don't think we've ever had something quite as dire as that. But at its heart, though, I think the real issue is, how do we get across to the American people the absurdity of all of our resources, or the lion's share of our resources, going to the military, in the sense that we are improving the redundancy of death at the expense of the quality of life?
Oh, very nice line, improving the redundancy of death at the expense of the quality of life. Yes, exactly. As if we didn't already have the ability to destroy at least higher life on Earth many times over with our nuclear weapons. Even with just our conventional weapons, we could go a long ways down that road if we launched into yet another massive boots-on-the-ground shooting war. We have all these undeclared drone wars going on all over the place, but mostly people ignore those because they're kind of under the radar. Not that they're not happening, not that they're not provocative and dangerous, but Trump seems even more inclined to at least threaten, maybe launch into World War III, basically. Terrifying. How to turn it back? Honey, if I knew, I'd have done it long ago. But I know for sure that whatever we can do as activists, whatever we can do to inspire formerly disempowered or lazy or not paying attention citizens to speak out as loudly as they can, as often as they can, call their elected officials, of course, sit in their offices, don't let them ignore that they've got to change things, stop funding wars, put back what Trump has already taken away. The Veterans Administration, where I get my health care, is on the auction block right now. You know, just on and on. Our schools are in disrepair. Our police are more and more militarized with surplus military equipment. Just on and on, all the terrible human deficits of our people in the U.S. And if we don't rise up, for sure it won't change. I don't know if rising up will change it, but for sure it won't unless. Rise up in every way we can. Speak to our neighbors, speak to our elected officials, sign petitions, hit the streets with banners, blockade elected officials' offices until they do the right thing. Civil resistance actions. I have dear friends who recently went into the submarine base at Kings Bay, Georgia, for what's called a plowshares action, referring to the Bible verse about beating swords into plowshares, that we must turn away from militarism and more weapons and sit down and work it out as reasonable people.
Well, just to touch on, you mentioning the VA, where you, as a veteran, Ellen Barfield, you get your medical treatment. The Koch brothers front concerns Veterans of America are behind this effort to privatize the VA.
That's right. That's right.
And people should be aware that this is just an absolute raid on the Treasury to basically turn over this very... They've been pumping all this propaganda about how screwed up the VA is, which is largely a lie. There have been some problems, obviously. But they're doing that because they don't want single payer, the American people, to figure out that single payer actually works. That's the real agenda, don't you think?
Oh, I absolutely do. The Veterans Administration is socialized health care, or single payer, if you will, yes. And it's far from perfect, mostly because it's pretty much never been fully funded, and so that everyone can't access it. Not every veteran is signed up with the VA. Sadly, that's a fact, and as far as I know, pretty much always has been, to varying percentages at various times. But the promises they make to veterans, and that's a big one, that you will have lifetime health care, it's a lie to a fairly large extent. And that's horrendous. But it's not because the VA is a bad organization. They do the best they can, and they are able to focus on particular needs that veterans have that the general civilian population don't have. And so destroying the VA, just throwing it into the regular medical market, would take away the tremendous advantages the VA has of the special knowledge and focus on particular veterans' problems. And it will, we, you know, veterans must object to that. Yes, the Koch brothers are able to pay for so-called grass tops, you know, things that appear to be grassroots and are actually highly paid for by rich people with an agenda.
Right.
That's what the Koch brothers have done in many arenas, and this is one of them. But, and, you know, Trump and gang are out to get Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security and the VA. Those are government policies, government programs that have worked pretty well for a long time, and there's a lot of money in them, of course, because they're expensive. Not enough money, but a lot of money. And so, of course, the rich people are going after those things. And we must say no. We absolutely must say no.
Well, just in closing, Ellen Barfield, since you are a veteran and you served with the U.S. military in Korea, I think the priorities in the way that we're dealing with the nuclear weapons as a focus with North Korea may be misplaced, because the real threat is the enormous conventional military force that the North Koreans have deployed just across the DMZ, their million-man army. Most of that army is deployed just across the DMZ. The artillery is in caves, in hardened bunkers, etc. And they have said, and everybody understands, that they could wipe out Seoul in a matter of an hour or so, turn it into a sea of fire, I think is what they've described it as. If you wipe out Seoul, you pretty much destroy a very successful and functioning country. So my sense is that we should have, from the beginning, been focused on conventional arms reductions. What do you think?
Absolutely. In fact, there was a time when U.S. troops in Korea, of which I was one back in 1980, long time ago, they were drawn down to a fairly large extent, and they've built back up again. Those numbers have fluctuated over time. And yes, it's true that North Korea has both a few nukes, that perhaps they could even get one or two of them to the U.S. mainland now with some missile development, but one or two, like I said. I mean, they have a handful. We have tens of thousands on hair trigger alert. Very different. But there are U.S. nuclear weapons in South Korea. There are U.S. nuclear weapons in submarines off the Koreas. And there are U.S. nuclear weapons all over the world that have the capability to converge on North Korea. So, and U.S. conventional forces in the tens of thousands of troops on the ground in South Korea, and again, Air Force and Navy and other troops in the Asia region that could be there in a heartbeat. So, yes, North Korea is a military threat, but what they are opposing is the massive U.S. presence in South Korea. And what they would particularly like to see end is the war games that the U.S. and South Korea are perpetrating all the time. They're very provocative. They fly into North Korean airspace. They sail into North Korean water. There's all this mainstream media blather about how dangerous North Korea is. And yes, they're pretty militarized, but the U.S. is way more militarized and also way more threatening. So, again, we get back to the two toddlers threatening each other, except that they're threatening the whole world. Well, and we got to speak out however we can to object to it. Part of what Veterans for Peace will be doing today at the Korean War Memorial is congratulating the two Korean leaders for sitting down and hoping they can move farther toward an actual peace treaty. The Korean police action that was never a fully declared war back in the early 50s and has never had more than a ceasefire ever since. It needs to have a treaty, and the country needs to be reunited while families can still see each other that have been divided at the DMZ for low these many years. People still want to see their relatives that they haven't seen in so long. And we need to, we as citizenry, we as veterans especially, need to push for those things, and that the Korean leaders get it right. Perhaps their concern over Trump's craziness will help them finally sign a treaty. Let's hope so.
Well, Alan Barfield, I thank you very much for joining us on this Memorial Day.
Thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Alan Barfield, who's a longtime activist with Veterans for Peace, who was deployed with the U.S. military in Korea. She is helping organize a series of events at the Mall in Washington, D.C. today, displaying the human costs of war on Memorial Day.